Hello and welcome to the Sonic Cinema Podcast. My name is Brian Scuttle. Thank you for joining me at www.sonic-cinema.com as well as the Sonic Cinema Podcast YouTube channel. Click subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, basically any podcatcher you can find us, as well as the YouTube channel, which has quick take reviews, as well as a lot more. You can also find me at patreon.com/SonicCinema. There you get early access reviews, as well as Leaving the Collection, Life Soundtrack, and more. That's at patreon.com/SonicCinema. Before we get into the meat of this episode's discussion, I wanted to say a couple of things. For posterity's sake, we are recording this the Sunday after the 2024 presidential election, where Donald Trump was elected for the second time in 8 years. And it's been a rough week for a lot of us. And one of the things that I strive to do at Sonic Cinema is to project positivity. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be always positive on the movies we discuss, but we're going to approach the filmmakers, the people who make the movies, with a modicum of respect. And that includes my guests, which, if you're a guest on this episode, I already respect you. I already value your opinion. You would not be on this podcast if I didn't feel that way. I am not in the business here of promoting negativity, toxic vantage points on film. And so, you know, that's how I've been for the entire time Sonic Cinema has been around, or I've tried to be as long as Sonic Cinema has been around. And if you're interested in that, if you're interested in something more toxic, more negative, more just bad faith discussions on film, this is not the place for you. This is a place to come together with fellow film lovers and just enjoy film. Like I said, even if we enjoy the film or not, just enjoy the aspect of talking about the film and bringing empathy to the discussion, bringing humor to the discussion, bringing a sense of fun to this discussion. And that's what I wanted to say on top of this episode, because of the fact that I wanted to make sure I was on the record. I mean, I know I've written about it a few times this year in blogs on Sonic Cinema. I wanted to make it clear once again on the podcast. So that being said, we are going to continue on with this episode, and I hope you enjoy it. This is actually a continuation of a series that I did in 2019 called the Class of 1999 series, basically looking at notable films from the 1999 movie year, which is one of the most significant movie years of my life and a lot of people's lives. And my guest is the one who suggested talking about this one. He is a return guest. He was just on back in July, where we were talking about the Jack Ryan movies, and he will be back in the future. Please welcome back to the podcast, Kevin Thomas. Kevin, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me on again. This is right in the middle of a very interesting time in history, and this film is right in the middle of a very interesting point in the Bond franchise's
existence. Yes, it is.
Releasing a Bond movie in 1999, and Y2K isn't brought up one. That was kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating because of the fact that, I mean, you know, there are times where There are times where the Bond movies, and this is the first time we've actually been discussing the Bond movies on the podcast. We haven't really discussed them in the past, so this will be an interesting one to start out with. But it's interesting because of the fact that there are times where the Bond movies sort of exist out of time, where they don't really reflect any particular politics of the era. They're just silly adventure movies.
Yeah.
But the Brosnan era is kind of interesting because of the fact that with Y2K, with the advent of the internet, and with the end of the Cold War, something had to change in the James Bond franchise. And the movie we're talking about is obviously 1999's The World Is Not Enough, directed by Michael Apted, best known for the Up documentaries before he passed away a few years ago. And it's interesting that, and this is right in the middle of Pierce Brosnan's outing as 007. And, you know, it's interesting. I vaguely remember what it was like for Brosnan to finally get the role because of the fact that famously he was approached by the production company to take on the role, but he couldn't because he was on the TV series Remington Steele at the time. So I think that is what, if I remember correctly, about the timeline,
that's what went on. Because they wanted him for Dalton, Timothy Dalton's Bond, but he was doing Remington Steele at that point. It was a scheduling thing, so he had to drop out of it or say no, and then Dalton got it for two movies. It took forever to write a third one, and the last one, and License to Kill, hadn't been received all that great. And so they just, Brosnan got it with GoldenEye, rebooted it with him, and it remains, as far as I know, pretty well liked today.
Oh, I still am a huge fan of GoldenEye. It's one of my it's one of my favorites of the Bond movies that I've seen. I still have several that I have left to see, but I've always been a fan of GoldenEye. And then he did Tomorrow Never Dies, which I had very fond memories of, in part because Michelle Yeoh just kind of kicks ass in that movie.
Oh yeah, and that's a fun one. And then I saw Tomorrow Never Dies a couple of years ago when I was just kind of breezing through the Brosnan era ones, and I was like, this is fun. This is just fun. Like, Tomorrow Never Dies to me is like, if I want to show what a basic Bond movie was to somebody, I would show them that one.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have this one, The World Is Not Enough, and then his run ended with Die Another Day, which had Halle Berry in it.
Yes.
And I remember liking that one in 2002, but I haven't seen it since, so I'm very curious to see if it holds up for me.
I remember I saw that one in college, and I was talking to a friend about it before I'd watched it, and she said, "Oh, you need to watch it. You need to watch it like it's a comedy." And so I did that, and so I went into it with that mindset, and the tonal dissonance of James Bond getting tortured by North Koreans while auto-tuned Madonna sings "Die Another Day" over it that was the moment where I'm like, "Oh, it's gonna be this."
Yeah.
Yeah, I can ride with this. This is so ridiculous, and I went with it. Like, it becomes a giant cartoon by the end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fun kind of dumb movie to me. Like, it feels like somebody wrote a Roger Moore script, like, for the later part of his time, and then just didn't give it to Roger Moore, and they're like, you know, put Pierce Brosnan in it, that'll work, right? In 2002, and add like a bullet time thing and skiing because Vin Diesel has that XXX thing coming out and we want to prove we're cool too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's 2002. I vaguely remember like the extreme thing in sports
era,
I guess. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, like, this is vaguely, like, it was all like Tony Hawk is everywhere, and skate pipes and half pipes and all this stuff. It's like, I'm not a skater, man, but I guess people are making a career out of it.
Right.
Cool.
No, absolutely. And but no, we're talking about the world is not enough. And, you know, I mean, I think one of the things is most interesting. I think one of the things that's kind of interesting about the Bond franchise during the Brosnan eras was that it was trying to figure out how to keep this franchise relevant in the 1990s and the early 2000s, not just with, you know, with Bond's trying to get away from Bond's constant sexism and misogyny, you know, in part of the reason why you got Dame Judi Dench's M, even though she's an amazing choice. I'm glad we got her for as many movies as we did. She's fantastic in that role.
Yes.
But, you know, the punny names for the most part are kind of gone, not entirely, but, you know, as we see in this movie, but, you know, and Famke Janssen was very famously Xena on a top in GoldenEye.
Yes.
But one of the things that I think is kind of really wild in the Brosnan era is the way they tried to do the theme songs with modern artists at the time.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned that, Madonna and Die Another Day.
And then I don't...
Tina Turner was GoldenEye.
Okay.
A fantastic song, by
the way. Yeah, GoldenEye is probably the... GoldenEye is without a doubt my favorite theme song of his era. Like that... I think that the song perfectly kind of sets the tone for the movie, which is what I think these songs should do. I think all the Daniel Craig ones did that really well. Like set the tone for their movies. GoldenEye does the best at setting the tone for its own film. And this, The World's Not Enough, by the band known as Garbage.
Yeah.
why the hell did you name yourself Garbage? Like, they might be a perfectly good band, but when I see theme by Garbage in the opening credits of a Bond movie, I'm just like, okay.
It is completely... I can't remember. Who was it who did Tomorrow Never Dies? I think it's Sheryl Crow?
I think Sheryl Crow did that.
Yeah. Which is, again, a completely maddening choice. I mean, I'm sure Tomorrow Never Dies was Sheryl Crow. It's like, okay, this is a choice. I mean, at least Tina Turner, she's got that old school big voice. Sort of like Adele when she did Skyfall.
Yeah.
So it makes sense, but it's like Sheryl Crow. I love Sheryl Crow as an artist, but this is not her.
Yeah, and even then, like, even just beyond her, like her vocal, I think her vocals are okay in that song.
Right.
But it's also like, I really like the way the title sequence opens. It's all like the tech stuff and the coding.
Yeah.
And then it's just like the song slows down for most of it. It's at kind of a medium level pace. Like, why do we have this big, cool tech opening if it's just going to be this kind of melodic ballad for most of it? Like, that doesn't... Yeah, like that doesn't really work for me. And I guess with the song by Garbage for this one, I will at least say like the beat is consistent. It doesn't go like up. It doesn't go like up and down. You know, the lyrics of it are in keeping with the themes of the movie. Like James Bond and his love is a major theme of this, which is suited for it. The oil. Like all the oil painting stuff, I was like, "Oh yeah, it's about oil." I forgot this is about oil.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's the funny thing is, it's like oil was really. I mean, yeah, oil was part of it, but because of the King Industries and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But it's really not. And I mean, I think that's part of what makes so many of the choices in this movie completely bonkers. But I mean, you know, look, I mean, the way the credits go, I mean, that type of credit sequence, it's like, look, I know it's going to be that type of thing for a Bond movie. You know, it's going to be weird. It's going to be goofy. And unfortunately, it doesn't really, I mean, other than the oil aspect, it doesn't really set a good tone. And it's not helped by the fact that the track is just extremely dull.
Yeah, it's I agree. Like, I was listening to, like, before we started, I was listening. So I've only heard this track, like, on top of the opening right. sequence before. And so I tried, like, okay, would I like this song if I listened to it without the opening sequence? And yes, I think it's a little bit better if you don't have all the weird oil stuff going on around it. But it's like, it still feels kind of like, if you ask ChatGPT to write a James Bond theme song, this is what you would get. Like, it's acceptable, it fits the bill, but it doesn't stick in my memory at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, and it's like, unfortunately, for this one, the title track just kind of sets the tone for the way this movie operates. So we start off with Bond on assignment. He's retrieving money from a Swiss banker for an oil tycoon and gets out mm-hmm. with the money. But when he makes it back to MI6, the money was booby-trapped and it explodes. It kills the tycoon and it basically leaves with
this boat chase, yeah. which is probably the action highlight of the movie, which is not not good if the action. The opening 20 minutes of it, or like 20, like maybe the half hour of it, I was actually kind of going with it. I'm like, all right, this is interesting. This is kind of lower stakes, fine. You know, like, they got Desmond Llewellyn as Q there, like, oh my yeah. god, he's taking my boat, and, you know, he's chasing somebody around, like, around the, I think it's the River Thames or something. It's like, all right, we're doing this. But, yeah, outside of that, there's the action in it feels kind of like, okay, they've been talking for 10 minutes, but an yeah. action scene right
yeah.
here.
Yeah, and... You know, I actually completely forgot about the fact that John Cleese is in this as sort of Q's replacement. And he's a good choice for that character.
Yeah.
But I don't, it's, A, you don't get anything with him in this movie. But it's like, okay, I mean, all right, we're kind of doing that.
It feels that scene, it's a good James Bond movie scene, like all the gadget stuff. It feels goofily out of tone with the rest of this movie. Right. That one of his gadgets is like an all encompassing blow up thing. It's like,
yeah.
Wait a minute. What? Yeah. okay. I don't think this movie is that goofy, but.
Which him and Electra King get stuck in later.
Yeah, later, I'm just gonna say it right off the bat. I think Michael Apted is a good director. Like he was a fine director. But I think he was the wrong director for a Bond movie.
I hate to say it because I do agree with you on that, because Michael Apted is an amazing director. Like, all you have to do is watch the Up documentaries and you see just what a fantastic filmmaker he is. He's mm-hmm. also done Cole Meyer's Daughter. He did.
I'll even stand up for the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, the third and final Narnia movie that he did. Like, I thought that was my favorite
of the Narnia movies.
I really enjoyed that one. So I really enjoyed that one as like a kid's fantasy thing that was mostly character focused. Like the yeah. action in that movie yeah. is the action in that movie is solid, but I like that it spends as much time as it does, like, just having the characters mull over things.
Right.
And so it just, like, the smallness of scale in that one compared to the other two. And I like all three of them, but, like, I liked the smallness of scale,
yeah,
of Dawn Treader. It makes it stand out in a positive way to me just as a movie. And with this, I think that the scenes where they brought Michael Apted onto this specifically because they wanted to do a smaller scale, more character focused Bond movie. And I don't
think they accomplished that.
No.
I would argue Casino Royale is more of a character, and certainly Skyfall, yeah, or more character driven than one is. This one gets into the cliches of the Bond franchise.
It tries. I mean, like, it's almost like the screenwriters looked back at, like, Sean Connery's run, and most of those were relatively small scale, like trying to stop the bank. We're gonna try and write a story like that for now, and it's like, they're trying to tell a smaller story while also putting huge explosions in it every 15 minutes. And you're just like, okay, there's not a ton of depth of character for Bond here. And the Electric King stuff is potentially interesting, but they needed another draft at it to fully make her work.
And it's not Sophie Marceau's fault. Sophie
Marceau, this movie is a neon sign of a good actress elevating a part that is it's not underwritten, but it's not written far enough.
Yeah.
Like, she's there. There's a good character there.
Yeah.
But I feel like they don't play up sort of how messed up her whole deal is.
Yeah.
With the villain Renard, or how, like, messed up or tragic that is.
If she had been the main villain instead of Renard, I think the movie could have worked a lot better.
I think so too, because Robert Carlyle as Renard, they give this guy the best setup ever, where it's like, he can feel no pain, like you can't hurt him, he feels nothing, and they're like, we're not going to do anything with that at all.
No, there's nothing. Okay. How do you go anywhere with that? Because of the fact that it's like he's got a bullet in his brain that's shutting down his nervous system's ability to feel pain. Yeah. And yet, at one point, they say he continues to build strength and stuff like that.
It's in the same scene. In that same scene with, like, he's a bullet in his head, but he's going straight. And I'm like, I didn't have a problem with that. Like, that's a thing where I'm like, all right, it's a Bond movie. I can totally go with this guy's just going to say, fine. The problem that I have is that they do not do a good job of showing that in his scenes.
Not at all.
And Robert Carlyle, not in bad shape. Like, he looks to be in decent shape, but he does not. They needed, like, a bodybuilder or something.
It's like a really
stronger. They need, like, a more muscular-looking guy for this.
Like, this would have been a perfect role for Dave Bautista during the Daniel Craig era.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this would have been a great role for Dave Bautista.
Absolutely. Or a Dave Bautista type, or somebody like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you know, it's like this. But the thing is, it's like, Renard, if he's the muscle, you can't have a character be the muscle. You can't really have a character be the muscle and the brains in a Bond movie. That's not how these films are built.
No, and they try to fix that by, like, he has, like, a henchman who's following Bond around, and it took me halfway into the movie before I realized, oh, this guy is the henchman of the movie.
Yeah.
And he makes no impression.
No,
he doesn't make an impression. It's like, I mean, he's there and he beats Bond up a bit, but I can't tell you what his name is or what his gimmick is. It's like, he's Bond henchman number 8. Like, okay. All right. Sure. And yeah, I mean, I think Electric King being the villain I think there's a way you could have written her, like, you can do everything that they do with her in this and still make her like a fun villain.
Yeah.
But it's like, they don't push it far enough. They don't push it into enough campiness, and they gotta push it in like super campiness or play it more seriously, which I think they're trying to do.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, y'all are sitting right there in the middle with this character who's pivotal to the entire story. And like when the way that she goes out, I'm like, oh, okay, she's gone now.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's like we should mention, so she is the daughter of the oil tycoon who dies earlier in the movie. Mm-hmm. The money that Bond is picking up is supposed to be the ransom for her, because she's being held captive by Renard. And so with that set up, okay, sure, Renard being the bad guy, and then she ends up with a degree of Stockholm syndrome, but it just doesn't, it doesn't work because of the fact that she leaves Sophie Marceau is an actress who exhibits intelligence. She's one of those actors that just, you recognize that she's an intelligent character just by the fact that she's the one playing it. And she basically is turned into a one note villain by the end when M is kidnapped. And it's like, yeah, and so you've got two one note characters in Renard and Electra King without much in the way of depth for either of them. And it just doesn't help.
It's weird. And apparently, like, what I found interesting in doing research for this one, just on my own time, was like, apparently, and I can't remember her name, but apparently they had a female screenwriter come in to buff up the female characters in this. And, you know, and apparently when she was gone, like, they thought that Bond was getting receded too much in the background, so they took some of it out. And so I'm just kind of like, I would love to know what she added, because it feels like, the women in this movie do have more prominence and a bit more personality to them than some Bond ladies of the past have.
Oh yeah,
definitely. It feels kind of like almost like a half measure, where it's like, all right, we're going to give them more, but not push it all the way. And I feel like you could have given them a little bit more, or Electricity a little bit more, without like making Bond feel like the co-star in his own movie. Like, it's still a Bond-focused movie. Like, he's the main dude, but it's like, it's mostly like doing more modernized thing where we've seen more women characters in these kinds of movies who are they have a bit more agency and depth to them.
Yeah.
To where I'm like, I know that they can do better. Like, you know, like we got Vesper a few movies later after this, and she's so great. She haunted the entire series.
Oh yeah.
But it's and I say haunted in a positive way, but it's like, so yeah, like the Electric King thing is, it's good, but frustrating. On the positive end, and I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, I like Christmas Jones.
And that's the Denise Richards character.
Denise
Richards playing a nuclear physicist,
which
obviously was a joke at the time because she was not
because known she, for, obviously, she's a bombshell.
Between her beauty, her other performances and stuff like Starship Troopers, like Wild Things, she's not the type of actress you see playing that type of character.
And I think that I saw a video recently where she was like, she was being interviewed or something, where like part of a podcast where she was saying like, oh yeah, I knew how ridiculous it was and I played it up to that. Like,
yeah,
she knew that her as a nuclear physicist was a ridiculous idea. And so I think that she plays that like it's supposed to be ridiculous.
Right.
And she adds like a bit of fun to the movie. Like she's where a lot of humor is. And yeah, I think that, yeah, like, and yeah, I think everything around her character, I think is fun and solid, like good blockbuster escapism. I especially like the Lindy Hemming, the costume designer, mm-hmm. the first outfit that we see her in. So she's in like a little nuclear outfit or hazmat suit. Yeah. And she takes that off. I ended up thinking, oh, it was Lindy Hemming inspired by like the Lara Croft games at the time.
Right.
With that, like, that's what anyway, I've only played like the 2013 game and started the Rise of the Tomb Raider, the second game in that, but I am aware of Lara Croft and what she looked like at that time. And so I was like, oh, it feels like you might have been inspired by that.
Well, now, of course, the Angelina Jolie movies, and then the next few years we would have that type of costume for her.
Yeah, and I like both of those too. Like, both of those are fun movies as well. But yeah, like this Christmas Jones, I know she's gotten a lot of the character, and Nisha just before gotten a lot of hate over the years. I think people have kind of softened on her a little bit I liked her last time I watched this, and I liked her this time. Like when she came in, like, okay, good. She's the strength of this to me.
I will admit, so this is my third time watching the film. I watched it once in theaters. I watched it once 5 years ago for a review for Sonic Cinema, and then I watched it in preparation for this podcast. I will say, I do like that Denise Richards is going with how ridiculous this movie gets in the second half of the movie, mm-hmm. as we get into the nuclear aspect of it. As we get into the scene where her and Bond are flying down the pipeline to try to stop a bomb from going off on the pipeline.
Oh, and my God.
I think there's, in the fact that she's in the submarine with them, I think she's definitely going in. I'm not going to say her performance is good, but she understands the type of movie that she's in.
Yes, that's a better way of saying and it.
And I think that is where I can definitely appreciate her character more now than I did 25 years ago.
Sure, because I mean, there's a video that I saw of somebody like defending her performance in this, and then like Denise Richards' acting career overall up to that point. And the guy pointed out, like, Denise Richards is kind of like a camp queen.
Yeah.
Like she's in this, and she's in, you know, Wild Things, and she's in Starship Troopers, is a very campy, self-aware, like,
yeah,
you know, such a thing. Like, and then apparently she's very good in Drop Dead. I think it's Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Oh, she's hilarious in Drop Dead Gorgeous.
I haven't seen that yet, but it's been my list for years. But yeah, like I think that she comes across as being like, She operates in camp,
mm-hmm.
and she brings a camp to this, which I wish was present elsewhere, because for all their attempts at hiring a guy who's known for like making more intimate character dramas, and I guess wanting something a bit less ridiculous than Tomorrow Never Dies, it's like you made something more ridiculous, but you didn't lean into it enough.
No. No, it's almost like two movies to a certain mm-hmm. extent. You've got the more or less straight Bond movie in the first half of the movie, and then mm-hmm. the second half is when they're leaning into the silliness of the Bond franchise. But yeah, they never really bring those elements together where it almost should have been less serious from the beginning and just leaning into how ridiculous the story is.
Yeah, and I feel like them putting, I know it's like the beginning of the movie, like before he actually goes out on his mission, like when he's getting all this stuff, like the first 20 minutes has a good amount of verbal humor in it.
Yeah.
So they are putting comedy, and he's having his wit, and again, the whole thing, like Q looking as he rides away in the boat is like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
My poor boat, like, so yeah, all of that stuff at the front is like, I mean, yeah, they're playing it seriously, but there's humor there. And then once he goes out, it's like that humor kind of drops.
Right.
And so you're like, wait, I get that we're not going to be as ridiculous as him and Waylon, like, riding a banner down a building in this here, but yeah, it was just very strange for them to put the humor at the front of it if they wanted this to be more serious. And then by the second half, it's like, you have Robbie Coltrane almost drowning in a thing of oil over goofy reasons. It's like, I don't think we knew what kind of movie we were trying to get here, guys.
I do kind of feel like they lost the plot to a certain extent. And it's one of those things where it's like, you have to lean one way or the other with this. Like, there's no way to find a middle. Like, I mean, say what you will about Tomorrow Never Dies and Goldeneye, they were relatively consistent.
Yeah,
in terms of the tone.
Yeah, they're very consistent. Like, they're very consistent tonally. Like, Tomorrow Never Dies especially. Like, it lets you know right off the bat, this is a big, dumb, explodey action movie, and it keeps to that. And Goldeneye, I mean, I'm kind of mixed on the, I'm not the biggest fan of, like, the Eric Serra score for that, kind of the brassy thing of it.
It feels very out of character for the Bond movies, but that's part of why I still love it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, I know, it gives it its own personality. There's no other Bond movie that sounds like that.
Yeah.
And that movie, it's really great as an introduction for him. It's like, okay, Pierce Brosnan gets to show a full range of emotions in that. It knows when to let him be charming, when to let him be kind of darker and serious. I mean, yeah, that movie does a really good job sort of reckoning with the fact that the Cold War is over now and Bond's way of approaching things is outdated. Like, M chastises him iconically the first time that she meets him in that. And, you know, see, so yeah, the world's not enough. It's like, yeah, it feels like they're stuck of trying to make the Brosnan fans happy who have come on to the series with him, and also trying to appeal back to maybe the Connery fans who have stuck with it, where it's like, it was just a very strange experience. Yeah, I do like Robbie Coltrane coming back from Goldeneye for this, for a couple of scenes. I forgot he was in this. I did too. Like, I was like, oh yeah, you're here. Awesome.
Yeah.
The cast on this overall is great. You got a lot of really awesome people in here.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can definitely see why people reacted kind of mixedly to this at the time, and I think to a degree still do. Like, I've heard some people say, like, this was sort of like a testing ground for what the Craig ones would do and being character focused, and I'm like,
it's not at all.
No,
because the Craig movies are quite literally character movies. They're so grounded, it's just not even funny.
The Craig ones have been criticized somewhat rightfully for being so self-serious at points that it becomes Spectre at points.
Oh yeah.
I enjoy Spectre for the action, but the tone of that movie is like, we're trying to be so serious, but also here's some class. It's also the same stuff that this one does to a lesser extent, where it's like, we have the gritty Craig era aesthetic, but we're throwing in some Brosnan era goofiness into this. Like, he's going to parachute out of a car and just land and dust himself off. Like, yeah, I'm cool.
And with Spectre, you also have the way they handle the return of Blofeld to the franchise too, which was a huge miscalculation on their part.
That was when they did that. I mean, I don't, I know that that handling alone makes some people hate it. I don't hate the movie for that, but I do think it's stupid. It's like, why does it have to be all? Oh, because the Marvel guys are doing that thing now.
Oh yeah, it's definitely leaning into the serialized Marvel type of storytelling at that point.
And it's weird, like, Casino Royale was out in, like, 2006, or in 2005, so, like, years before Iron Man came out, as we saw it, like, they kind of set that up beforehand.
Right.
Like, we're going to start, like, okay, this will be a serialized thing for Bond. So, yeah, to see them kind of reverse course into that, it's like, you know, you didn't have to do this. And also, that opening title sequence is far weirder than this one.
Yeah.
I remember that opening title sequence. Oh, boy. But yeah, no, this, you know, the world is not enough, and neither is the movie.
Yeah.
I think indeed. That it's just like, no. And I think that Pierce Brosnan's performance in this is, I think it's good. I think that he as a character is written more seriously through it, and that's the one consistency that it has.
I will say this about Brosnan as Bond. I think he's probably middle of the pack overall as far as Bonds go. Mm-hmm. But I do like that he found his rhythm in the character, and he just basically continued to lean into that.
Yeah.
So I will say that.
Yeah, like he kind of I would say I think he comes up in GoldenEye and immediately you're like, okay, this is how he's gonna play this.
Right.
And it stays certain elements are played up depending on what movie it is. Like I think Tomorrow Never Dies plays up a lot of the quippier side of him a lot more than the other ones, but it mm-hmm. still feels consistent in character. Like, they had the same writers writing all four of these.
Yeah.
And so it's like, all right, it's your character. You're keeping him and anyone else you bring back, like, up to snuff. And yeah, I think if my parents let me watch this as a kid, which they wouldn't have, but if they had, I would probably have a very big attachment to him. Like, I think he's an action hero, and he's doing all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
He's getting the girl at the end. It's like, yeah, like I think the Brosnans found a really good balancing point of doing, like, you know, the fantasy stuff of Bond, and then also like just being, for the most part, good action movies, mm-hmm. like regards to that. And also, I also want to thank fellow podcaster, the Nostalgic Cast, for bringing this to my attention in one of our Twitter discussions on the World's Not Up. He brought to my attention that there are like money shots missing in the action scenes here.
Yeah.
Where I was paying attention and noticing, like, yeah, the second unit guys or whoever was in charge of this, they're not bad, but they don't flow. Like there's one shot in particular, like Brosnan's head like comes up from the bottom of the frame into the middle of the frame and then falls back down again and an explosion behind it. I was like, you couldn't get, why didn't he come fully into the shot there?
Right.
Or like things will fall off and an explosion is heard but not seen, and they're cutting a lot.
Yeah.
And it's like, I never lose track of where things are in the scenic geography of it. Like, I can tell what's happening and who's close to where, but it's like the action here doesn't feel as well thought out mm-hmm. as any of the other, like, Brosnan Bonds or any that would come after.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh yeah, we got a guy who isn't an action guy to direct an action movie. What could go wrong?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's actually a good point. You're talking about Darren from NostalgiaCast, and I mean, he always notices things like that, which that would not necessarily cross my mind in this, but
no, neither would it back of
it. It's like, oh yeah, I kind of see what he means here. And it's like, it just really doesn't have those moments that where the climax of these action sequences really pop.
No.
And, yeah.
I mean, again, it feels like the tone of the dialogue scenes versus the tone of the action scenes, it's not like completely off, but like it just feels a little bit off. Like, oh, this guy is trying to direct a more serious spy movie, and then the second unit guy is like, I'm making a big spectacle over here, and
yeah,
we're going to meet each other occasionally for drinks. It's like,
yeah,
you guys didn't want to like iron this out to make it blow better, because yeah, especially the second half where it's mostly all action. It's like,
right,
okay, so all the talking stuff and the attempted character building didn't manifest into much for me.
No, it didn't. I mean, you know, they've tried with. I mean, I think Sam Mendes for Skyfall Spectre was like, he's arguably the biggest name director
of his name
in general to ever direct Bond movies.
I feel like he's one of the best guys to do it.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, these films ultimately, they're very much in the Marvel vein where they're not necessarily driven by the vision of the director so much as they are the producers.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of those things where I think, you know, I understand why the Bond movies are like that to a certain extent, but also, you know, I'd like to see more auteurs do it. I'd like to see you take a chance on an auteur who has a really strong idea of the type of Bond movie they want to do, as opposed to a journeyman like Martin Campbell, who granted did fantastic work in both GoldenEye and Casino Royale, but you don't necessarily get the impression that he's got much of a voice as a filmmaker after that.
Well, yeah, and I would say, like, even, I mean, the Bonds have always been directed, they've always been directed by journeyman guys. Like, yeah, they've always, like, all of them were just done by, like, hey, we need you to do this. Okay, great, I'm going to do it. And I think, I want to say it was, like, Lewis Gilbert or somebody Gilbert who did, like, five of them or did, like, multiple of them in a row. Where it's like, okay, so we had this one guy doing them. Yeah, I think that this one doesn't really have a lot of distinct personality to it. I would honestly almost argue like Die Another Day, the next one, has more personality to it because
yeah,
at least like, okay, it starts out serious and then gets goofy about a third of the way into it, but it stays on that goofy track
yeah
for the rest of it. And again, it oozes early 2000s trying to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is stuck between trying to be timeless and then also trying to stick with the Brosnan thing of updating it for the 90s and, you know, how do we appeal to everyone? And so it's kind of just a mishmash of a lot of different things.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I mean, you brought up Eric Sutter's score for GoldenEye, which I'm a big fan of, but I will say David Arnold, who basically scored every Bond film from Tomorrow Never Dies to, I think, Casino Royale.
I don't remember if he
did Quantum of Solace as well.
I don't remember if he did that or not. I think that Casino Royale was his last one.
But yeah, he's a terrific composer for
these
movies. He does a very good job. He understands exactly what these movies need.
Yeah, like the music.
As a composer.
Yeah, like the music of this, I have no problems with. Like all the.
Yeah, the
music, like the action cues themselves, they're pleasant to listen to. They get your heart pumping, even if the action doesn't always. The more sinister cues in here work solidly. I mean, yeah, he did a good job on this. Like the music in here, really solid. I would listen to it outside of the movie easily.
Yeah.
And yeah, even like, probably my favorite bit is at the end, like the iconic last line that he has with Christmas Joe.
Yeah.
That whole scene is so goofy. It's like, why couldn't we have more of this?
Right.
Like, this here is a perfect tone for this movie, and I wish you hadn't found it on the last beat.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because of the fact that, in a way, with Christmas Jones, they're kind of leaning more into a little bit more of the, you know, I don't necessarily want to say misogynist
bond
of, like,
not really,
campy, like, you know, quippy type one-liner, you know, female characters that inspire one-liners and stuff like that and double entendres. But
there's less of that. There's a lot less of that in this one than there are in early ones. And even like when he first meets her, it's like, oh, Christmas. And she's like, buddy, I've heard all the jokes. Like,
yeah,
don't even.
Exactly. I mean, I do think, you know, and we mentioned Richards earlier. It's like she is. I mean, I wonder how much of this is working with Verhoeven on Starship Troopers and, you know, basically being told, look, this is not a serious movie. We're going to play it seriously, but it's not a serious movie. And you see the way she plays the character in Wild Things. You see the way she plays the character in Drop Dead Gorgeous. And this, it's very knowing, and it's very, she's very aware of what she's going for and what the movie requires.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, like, I saw Wild Things a few years ago, and I was impressed by how that movie starts out being kind of like, oh, this is going to be a serious thing. And it takes a turn. You're like, oh, this is glorious trash.
Oh, yeah. It always was.
This is unashamedly trashy, and everybody in it knows it, and she plays it perfectly, and Starship Troopers is golden
for everybody
on the movie knowing exactly this is super camp, but we're gonna like lean so far into that you wouldn't believe it. I mean, I love Starship Troopers to death because it knows exactly what it is and how to do it. And I really like Denise Richards in this because she seems to have watched other Bond movies and been like, oh, this is a James Bond movie. This is like fun and ridiculous, right? Like, she saw Tomorrow Dies and was like, this is the universe in which Michelle Yeoh and Pierce Brosnan can ride down a tower on a thing, right? Like, okay, I'm in that universe while everyone else is over here. All right, I'm going to hold my part of the boat up and you guys do what you're doing, paddle over there, I guess.
Exactly. No, I mean, and, you know, look, it's funny because of the fact that it's like you were saying that your opinion on this kind of
went down
a bit.
And I like the movie fine. Like, it's enjoyable enough to me. Like, it's not, like, I have a copy of it. It's not a terrible movie. It's just, like, decent to me at the point. It's a decent Bond movie. The stuff that I like about it's, like, the dramatic moments and some of the action and Denise Richards and just, like, you know, the performances are kind of what get me through it. And, you know, watching stuff blow up is fun, even if it doesn't, even if it's not the best blow up.
It's
all right.
Yeah, and it's funny because of the fact that I don't know that I would say this is a good movie, but I will admit I enjoyed it quite a bit watching it this time because of just how ridiculous it gets.
Yeah, and that, absolutely, and that's I find that much as I grew up in the Daniel Craig era, so I saw Skyfall, like, Skyfall is the first one that I saw in theaters, which was, like, really kind of, it was dark and serious, but also fun.
Yeah.
And then I saw Spectre when it came out on DVD, and then No Time to Die when it was in theaters. And so I grew up in the Craig era, which was more serious tonally, but it knew when to have, I think it mostly knew when to have fun. And so watching the Brosnan ones, which were more focused on being fun, and this one trying to have a bit more meat on its plate, I guess.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you know, you're not going to out Goldeneye, you guys. Like, that one is more serious. That one has a bit of a character thing going on with Bond and 006.
Right.
Like, I feel like for the Brosnan era, Goldeneye is as much of a character-focused movie as we were going to get.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
And yeah, and then trying here, like it's a, I appreciate you try it, but it's, you know, you should have gotten a director who could make it more serious all the way through, or somebody who would look at this movie and be like, oh, we're trying to do like Roger Moore stuff again, right? Okay, yeah. Great. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Again, not that Michael Apted, like I've seen more of his, I haven't seen any of his documentaries, but I have seen a few of his, like, I've seen more of his movies, and he's a good filmmaker without question. And I'm sure that he came in here and did what he was asked to do and tried to put some of his own stuff in there. But it's like, it's just one of those cases of a director not really being the right fit for the kind of movie that this ultimately becomes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very fair criticism on this movie. I'm glad you brought this. I'm glad you suggested this one because of the fact that it gave me a chance to rewatch after we've finally seen the end of the Craig era and kind of how that's gone. And no, it was good to revisit this one and to kind of realize that there's some decent things in there, even if it doesn't stick the landing completely. And I think it's definitely a film that I'm glad is part of this series. And Kevin, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me on. It was always a joy to talk about this.
Oh, absolutely. Before we go, where can people find you online?
Okay. So you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Kevin the Critic. I am currently on Twitter/X, but I haven't been on there much in the past week just for a multitude of reasons. And I am thinking that I will spend even less time there because timeline is going the way of the dodo bird at this point. When I go on, people are more insane on every side of everything. It's like, it's draining to be there at this point.
Yeah.
Normally I would be there talking movies, but I saw somebody get mad and flare up over an actor over something. I'm like, I am not here for this. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. This does not affect my personal life. Like, y'all get mad at this, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, find me on Facebook and Instagram at Kevin the Critic, where I just, you know, talk, I just, you know, post movie thoughts and full length reviews at kevinthecritic.com. I'm on Threads occasionally.
Yeah.
I just remembered that I had a Blue Sky account that haven't been active in about a year. The last thing I posted on it was about how much I liked the that Disney short thing where all the Disney animated characters were together.
Oh, okay.
Studio or whatever. That's the last time I posted there. Like, oh, Once Upon a Studio is out and it's great. That's the last post that I made on Blue Sky. But yeah, Facebook and Instagram are the best ways to find me. And you can read all my full-length reviews, positive, negative, and in the middle, at kevinthecritic.com.
Okay, excellent. I do want to thank Kevin, as always, for joining me. It's always a pleasure to talk to him. That's going to be it for this episode of the Sonic Cinema Podcast. Again, check us out wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, and any other podcatchers that you might find us. You can also check us out at patreon.com/sonic cinema. But more importantly, you can find me online at www.sonic-cinema.com. You can also find me on all of the social media platforms that Kevin mentioned, including Blue Sky, which it looks like is going to be the exodus point for film Twitter people.
Oh.
Based on the past week, I've gotten a lot more follows there. So it's like, crap, I guess I need to start posting there on a regular basis now.
I lost 30 followers over the last week and I posted nothing. It's like, I haven't said or done anything stupid or controversial, so people are just
going. it's a mass exodus. Like I reached out to some other Twitter people, and I know some other people we've been talking about, like, okay, where are we going to go next? Because it's like I feel like after the election, people just kind of realize that. That Twitter's going to get even more insufferable than it has been in the past two years.
See, and my problem is that I don't want all the insufferable people on Twitter to move over to Blue Sky. It's like, so I'm just like, I don't want to even, I don't know where I want to be.
So here's what I will say about Blue Sky. This is something that I've realized in the past couple of days since I've been on there a little bit more. There is more robust and better blocking, better ways to block people on there than Twitter and even Threads.
I find Threads insufferable. It's like, I posted that I like Star Wars once, and now my entire timeline is people saying The Acolyte is the best Star Wars thing ever. Like, it got canned because no one was watching it. Deal with it. Oh my God.
The algorithm, like, I've enjoyed Threads over the past few months, but yeah, the algorithm is completely jacked up on there. And then moderation is another thing. But
So it's just like, I also mentioned like an autism thing once. And so it's like, for a day, my time was like, all these autism parents complaining about how something, like, stop. Like,
yeah,
I get it, but. No, like, this is not what I want to see people struggling all the time with it. Like, you just,
yeah,
I don't like how their algorithm seems to work.
Yeah, no, I mean, it, you know, look, it's part of the Zuckerberg gang of Instagram and Facebook. So, I mean, that that kind of tells you everything you need to know about the algorithm. But anyway, let's wrap this up. I was on the way through the conclusion. But yes. Thank you very much for everybody who's listening to this. We have a couple more Class of 1999 episodes to do this year, and as well as a special Christmas episode that is going to be a bit of a unique take on it. I hope you listen to that. But yeah, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Sonic Cinema Podcast. This is Brian Scuttle from Sonic-Cinema.com. Thank you very much.